Yeah, I didn't see the Carson City. Justice Perrigar is joining us, but he's in Carson City, so let me just make sure we're ready to go there.
There he is.
Justice Perrigar, can you hear us?
Yes.
Perfect. Okay. All right, this is the time set for docket 90244. You may approach the podium and get started when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Mariah Northington, and I represent the City of Sparks. This case here today presented before you is about maintaining the integrity of active criminal case files and individual constitutional rights by allowing for the temporary confidentiality of these records as already provided for in this court's precedent. This case is about transparency with constitutional timing. This case is all about timing. Under Daunry, temporary confidentiality is justified when the government can establish by a preponderance of the evidence that there are concrete risks to the investigation, the prosecution, and individual constitutional rights, such as the right to a fair trial and the right to due process. What was absent in Daunry was proven here, and that difference must have a legal consequence. Here, this public records request was submitted only 21 days after the case was referred to Sparks PD for investigation. It was at the height of substantial evidence review. They were actively attempting to identify whether there was any co-conspirators, additional victims, witnesses by combing through hundreds of media files, videos, and pictures, including sexually explicit material. They were at the height of active investigation. The district court correctly found that the disclosure created concrete risks to this criminal proceeding and that the city lawfully denied this public records request. However, the district court then veered off to the left and ordered partial production based solely on who happened to have requested the file. This remedy cannot be reconciled with the district court's own findings of risks created by disclosure and is inconsistent with the NPRA, which is a requester-neutral process where the government is obligated to provide access to the general public. The Daunry test created by this court 36 years ago protects criminal justice interests, including a suspect's constitutional right to a fair trial. And it also is supported by the basic premise that a public's interest in a criminal case file is not in seeing an incomplete case file, but it's in seeing justice done and convictions upheld. Any interest in public oversight of police misconduct cannot effectively be addressed with an incomplete case file wherein there's only allegations thus far. Therefore, the city requests that the court reverse the district court's partial production order, uphold the determination that the city's denial was justified under Daunry, and use this case as a vehicle to clarify Daunry that when there are proven concrete criminal justice risks, the case file is temporarily exempt from 239 disclosure.
Is there anything in the statute that exempts the investigative files from public disclosure?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe there's a couple of avenues to get there, and that is part of what we're asking today is for the court to harmonize these various avenues to reach the result that we are requesting.
But why wouldn't it just say investigative files are exempt from production?
We do, and we keep getting sued.
I mean the statute. Why doesn't the statute just enumerate that?
NRS 239 says that we must provide records other than this list of 400 plus statutes and otherwise declared by law. This court has recognized quite a few common law exemptions to public dissemination, including deliberative process in the DR Partners case, the privacy interest from the Cameronesi case, which you guys adopted here in Nevada, and the Daunry criminal justice risks. So any common law exemption also falls under 239.010. So we do think that it already as is confidential. The reason we're here is because we keep getting sued on not providing these records.
So is it your position, counsel, that the balancing test is not sufficient? Because I think you're asking us to build a bridge that I'm wrestling with whether we should be building that bridge or the legislature should be either identifying the documents or building these legal protections into the statute.
Yes, Your Honor. I am asking the court to do that with this case. I think this case provides a great vehicle for that. It is the City of Sparks' position and the position of many government agencies, as you can tell from the amicus briefs, that open and active criminal case files are confidential. But it is an ongoing issue of litigation, and the reason I'm standing here is because it's not clear. So we think there's a couple of avenues to get there, right? I think Daunry as it is provides that, and we need clarification on that. In Daunry, you held that the absence of these factors means you have to disclose. So when we have the existence of—
Don't our cases explicitly say that the court actually, contrary to what you're arguing, that the court, in fact, has to look at the individual, not necessarily an in-camera review, but has to rule based on the individual documents and evaluate them independently. We've had multiple cases where this same kind of argument was being made by a government entity, and we've instead said you can't just make those broad statements. You have to look at what are the individual documents that are being withheld and whether the balancing test is met.
So this case presents an interesting argument for both of those propositions. So we did provide a detailed factual description of what the case file looked like on that date, which was incomplete. They were still gathering evidence. So we would not have been able to provide what existed because it was actively.
And by that, by the detailed, you mean the number of pictures and the number of pages?
And how many days it had it and how much more they had to do. Additionally, that the case law requires that the agency provide a factual description, which we did, and the district court provide specific findings of those Donray factors, which the district court did here. And that's not in dispute in this case. The respondent has withdrawn their appeal. So whether the sufficiency of the district court's findings are not in dispute in this case. He specifically found that the Donray factors were at play. He listed certain ones that he was primarily concerned with about the chilling effect of potential witnesses, collaboration of testimony amongst the victims, thwarting the detective's ongoing investigation. We had presented several other concerns like the flight of the suspect, also the suspect's own rights.
Let me ask this, because you mentioned it. With the cross appeal withdrawn and the only appellant being the City of Sparks, which is only objecting to the order of the district court to disclose a limited set of documents, why do we even get to the question that you're asking us to make that broad holding on? Why is that even before us in the context of only Sparks having only a limited appeal?
I think the existence of this lawsuit presents that question to you. The submission of a public records request in the middle of an investigation that we deny and then we have to defend a lawsuit at taxpayer expense indicates that this is an issue that is ongoing constantly throughout the state. And we are acting.
If we were to agree, just hypothetically, if we were to agree that there isn't a basis under the NPRA to order a limited set of documents only because of the specific identity of the requester, if we were to agree that that is not appropriate, why would we get to any other question that you're trying to raise in the case? Isn't that the only issue being appealed?
I would say that the City of Sparks has presented two issues here. The first issue and the primary issue is the district court's abuse of discretion in this case by relying upon the identity of the requester to create an exemption to Donray. I do agree that is the primary issue. However, we believe this case is a good mechanism for this court to harmonize the various contradictory proceedings and to provide guidance to government agencies and requesters across the state. This is an ongoing issue that I deal with on a weekly basis.
And so you want us to harmonize by essentially establishing a per se rule that an open investigation is confidential and not disclosable.
In best case scenario, Judge, yes, I would like a bright line rule.
And I'm sympathetic to, as you describe here, something that arises in a request very early in an investigation. But how would a per se rule allow any type of media or public access to judge government conduct in a cold case? 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, if the agency can just continue to say it's an open investigation so nobody can ever get anything.
No, I understand that there's concerns with the outliers, right? We're talking about murder, which has no statute of limitations, because the statute of limitations creates guardrails on the concerns presented by the amici for the respondents. So we're talking about the outliers here, right? The Tupac case, I think, was raised. And my counter to that is that there is currently a Tupac case, criminal case, ongoing. And just because the case is old does not mean that that suspect does not still have constitutional rights that we as the government have to balance before disseminating public records. And so I understand that the older cases are of concern, and those can be addressed on a case-by-case basis. We already do address these on a case-by-case basis. If we deny a request under Donray and the requester pushes back and says, I heard the case was actually closed, I will personally call the detective and I'll say, what's going on? And a lot of the times it's that he's going to restart the investigation after the DA's office no issued the charges, or it is true that it is done and he's tying up loose ends that day. And we'll.
So if he says it was closed yesterday, then you could respond to the request, but then if he gets more information in 2 months,
yes,
then he reopens it and then the same documents wouldn't be disclosable?
If he's saying that he's not going to continue any investigation and he's going to close out the case, and Sparks, they use the term suspended, right? If there's insufficient probable cause to establish charges, they'll suspend the case. That is closed, right? There are no charges being sought, which is exactly what happened in Donray. So Donray already provides for this. When there are no charges being sought, the case is releasable. And if he happens to open it later, then it's on the prosecution to unfortunately have to try to cure any damage that release has caused. I'm asking
ever
a circumstance where the identity of the requester matters for NPRA?
Under the NPRA, no. But the legislature has created a couple of exceptions to that general rule that the NPRA is for the general public. I know of one because it passed this past legislative session where victims of domestic violence can get specific records to help with temporary protection order applications. But generally, the NPRA is not the route to access those records. So NPRA is for the general public, and that is stated in NRS 239010, that it is for any person, for the general public. And so we have to balance all of these various concerns, constitutional rights, presumption of innocence, NRS Chapter 174, which provides legal guardrails on how these records are disseminated. And we don't think that releasing criminal case files under the NPRA, open criminal case files, comports with 174. We think it creates a huge problem for the criminal presiding parties, who are the ones that should be making these determinations. How are we supposed to redact under Daunre when me, the civil attorney, and the Sparks PD record staff don't know what we don't know? We don't know what the charges are. We don't know what the defenses are. We don't know what the suppression issues are going to be. At this time, we didn't even know who the suspects were going to be. And so we can't redact what we don't know, and we can't let things slip through the cracks to the detriment of suspects' constitutional rights. The NPRA must yield to the Constitution, and the NPRA is in contradiction with the NRS Chapter 174, and we are asking this court to harmonize those contradictions.
Shouldn't the judge be the one to decide, though, what, under the balancing test, what gets provided and what doesn't?
I believe the criminal judge needs to make that decision, because the NRS Chapter 174 provides that mechanism for the criminal presiding judge to issue deferments of disclosure of case files, to issue protective orders over case files. The civil judge presiding over a petition like this one does not have the ability to make those determinations, especially in this case where he wasn't even charged yet. So it's the criminal presiding judge under 174 who has that role, and we are usurping that role by publicly disseminating it under the NPRA.
We already held in the Conrad case, the 2023 Conrad case, that generalized assertions in an affidavit about the effect of disclosing the full investigative report are not sufficient, and that it doesn't explain why the records are confidential or why the records could not be redacted. So, like, I don't
understand.
How is there a conflict in our law? It seems like we've been pretty clear. Perhaps your client doesn't agree, but that's the way it is.
If I may answer the question, Judge, I believe there's a conflict between Conrad 1 and Conrad 3. Conrad 1 relied upon the affidavit of Sergeant Johnson, which had no facts. It just gave the general descriptions. And so my affidavit from my Lieutenant Patton is different than that, because we provide the factual basis for which the district court made the specific findings that Daunre was at issue. Additionally, in Conrad 3, the district court refused to require disclosure when all that was provided was the criminal court docket, and this court did not take issue with that in Conrad 3, which was in 2024. That's the Conrad v. Washoe County case. That was not the primary issue on that appeal, but I do believe Conrad 1 and Conrad 3 conflict as to what is sufficient to support Daunre, and so we are trying to meet the middle ground here. I don't know what more we could have provided, given the weird state of the case file as it was at the time of the request, to establish the Daunre factors. With that, I would like to...
Is there sufficient information given to the judge to make a decision, though, about each individual piece of information and whether it should have been confidential or not?
He had other information, other means deemed available... He had other means deemed pertinent by the district court to make that determination. He decided he had sufficient information to make that determination, and he did make that determination. And again, those findings are not in dispute in this case. Additionally, that was the same position taken by the district.
Didn't review anything in camera.
No in-camera review was conducted.
The records.
No, just like no in-camera review was conducted in the Conrad 3 case, and that was not overturned on appeal either.
So is that not problematic to just kind of blanket rule that they're non-disclosable before he got to the requester part of it?
No, I think...
reviewing any of them?
I think it's problematic because this court in Conrad 1 said either an in-camera review or other means deemed appropriate. This court has expressly rejected the requirement of an in-camera review a few times, most recently of which was in the Conrad 3 case in 2024. So an in-camera review is not required. We presented sufficient evidence that the Daunre risks were at play, and the district court made specific findings based on that evidence, and that issue is not on dispute in this appeal. With that, I'd like to reserve my time.
So even if an investigative file perhaps meets the government interest, even if it does, the whole point of the balancing test is to balance that against the public interest in disclosure. Why wouldn't, don't we have to do that in each individual case?
I do think we need to do that. We also need to balance it against an individual's constitutional rights. And an individual's constitutional rights today trumps the right to public access today. Okay. The public access and public accountability piece can absolutely be satisfied later. Also, you can't adequately address public accountability with a piecemeal investigation that's just allegations. How are we going to hold a criminal suspect publicly accountable in the media without trumping his constitutional right to a fair trial and his presumption of innocence? So I do think the NPRA needs to temporarily yield to constitutional rights. With that, I'll reserve my time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, Luke Busby on behalf of respondent Erica Bluth. Pursuant to the court's order granting our joint motion under NRA P29G, I'll briefly introduce the case and Margaret McClutchie will present the remainder of our argument. On New Year's Eve 2023, Erica Bluth was pulled over by a Reno police officer. During that stop, the officer took her cell phone to his patrol vehicle for about 10 minutes on the pretext of checking, verifying her insurance information. 9 months later, two Sparks police detectives appeared unannounced at her parents' home. They showed her intimate photos and videos, images stored on her own phone that appeared to have been photographed from her screen by another device, and asked about the traffic stop. And Ms. Bluth did what any other citizen would do under the circumstances. She filed a public records request. Sparks did not produce a single page. It did not redact. It did not prepare a log of what it was withholding. It issued a blanket denial resting on two basic essential words, active investigation. When Sparks was asked to review the file, produce non-confidential portions, and identify what was withheld and why, Sparks called the request premature and refused again. And the district court did what this court's precedent commands. It weighed the interests on the actual record before it and ordered production of the records regarding Ms. Bluth only. And the cities now ask that the court overturn that order, not because the court was wrong in our view, but by adopting a categorical exemption for active investigation files that the legislature has never enacted. And in our view, that's not a legal argument. It's a lobbying pitch directed at the wrong branch of government. Ms. McClutchie will now address why the court should decline the invitation and affirm the court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, Maggie McClutchie for the Las Vegas Review Journal, Inc., the Nevada Press Association, and the Nevada Open Government Coalition. Even if this were the right forum to make the policy arguments that law enforcement agencies are making in this case, the argument that no records about an investigation in a criminal matter can be released until the criminal proceeding is closed or harms will occur necessarily fail. Not only is it required in the public records context to show with particularized evidence and harm that there is a risk that clearly outweighs the presumed benefit and access, so that's part of the test that my friend on the other side left out. Not only is that assumed, you can't possibly make that in a categorical, all records of this type that might relate to a possible future criminal case are per se secret. That's not what the law says. Further, they haven't even actually showed that as a generalized matter, that harm's likely to result. I'm not aware of any criminal case in which this court has overturned a conviction because of unfair publicity in a criminal case. There are all kinds of ways in criminal cases to address jury issues, and that is through voir dire. And make no mistake, while they're claiming that no information about a criminal case can be released until the criminal case is over, whatever that means, by the way, they release information about criminal cases all the time. So what they're really arguing is that they get to control the flow of information. That argument cannot stand, not just in light of the underpinnings of the Public Records Act, the goal of promoting government accountability, but also the underpinnings of Marcy's Law. Marcy's Law doesn't assume, as they've argued in their briefs, that they're doing a great job in the investigation. And they're ensuring that this case is going to get to the prosecutors. Marcy's Law doesn't assume that at all.
Ms. McClutchie, though, for NPRA purposes, does it matter at all who is asking for the records? Because to me, that seems a bit off point.
I think that the issue's moot because Ms. Bluth has requested the records, didn't request that they be treated privately as to her. The question in this case is whether the district court's order should be affirmed. And I do think the victim's entitled to their own records. This court has explained that the privacy test is there because third parties can't protect themselves. Certainly Marcy's law in privacy isn't a sword.
I'm sorry. I don't necessarily disagree with you, but does that have anything to do with the MPRA? Because the request here was made as a public records request, not as some other avenue for a victim to receive records about a crime that they had something, you know, that impacted them.
Well, under the MPRA, you can consider things like whether the information needs to be protected. And if a victim says, I don't need this information to be protected, the common law privacy test is still based on that victim's interest. So I do think it could matter. But the district court's judgment and order can be affirmed on multiple grounds, and not just including the fact that the requester was asking for her information about herself, but also because under this court's case law and the plain text of the NPRA, this information is not secret. They did not meet their burden of coming forward with a preponderance of evidence to show that the interest in secrecy outweighed the presumption in favor of access.
Ms. McCletchy, so if the victim, I'm just trying to figure out how this works in practice. If a victim of a crime can make a public records request to get documents, then they can get those, but say the review journal would not be able to?
If the victim says, I'm not concerned about the privacy interest, give me the records about the investigation into me. The photos are not at issue. In that instance, these records could be provided to the review journal. I think whether under the NPRA or other bases, I think law enforcement can share information with victims, but that's not what they're posing in this case. What they're saying in this case is that victims' rights, despite the victim's position in this case, despite Marcy's law, and despite the text of the NPRA, and potential constitutional concerns in a jury trial, which criminal judges are vested with the ability to control, as a per se categorical rule, overcome the text of the NPRA and decades of this court's precedent. Of course, the text of the NPRA has been changed since Donnery. But even then, what they are arguing, their arguments are cribbed from the dissent in the Donnery decision, which was made in 1990, and it is based on an outdated version of the NPRA. Even just their arguments about, even if there were to be a policy debate, which belongs to the legislature, about whether criminal case records should be closed until there's an investigation, there's all kinds of problems with their argument. Law enforcement officers, district attorneys are not infallible. The public has the right to assess whether, for example, the police agencies are taking sex victims' cases seriously, whether they're policing their own. One of the privacy interests that law enforcement asserted in this case was the privacy interest of the officer who engaged in wrongdoing. They did so despite the fact this court made very clear in the Trooper case in LBRJ v. LVMPD that you cannot use CCSD as a shield to avoid accountability, that it protects only very narrow, limited information.
Ms. McCletchy, I'm sorry, from a disclosure perspective, would you agree that different showings may be required pre-charging as opposed to post-charging? So when they're trying to figure out who did it, who are the victims, and those type of things, do you agree that a showing, I mean, you may need a lesser showing before somebody's charged than you do after somebody's charged?
I think that's the whole point of the balancing test. And I think, frankly, my friend on the other side misrepresent what Donnery says. Donnery doesn't say, if these interests are implicated, game over. What Donnery stood for, and again, it's been modified over time due to changes in the text of the MPRA, what it says, if there are interests that are implicated by disclosure of the record, then there's a balancing test. And Justice Stiglitz, what you're saying is that in some cases, the balancing test may weigh more favorably against access. And that is absolutely true. But this court's case law, decades of precedent, says that is done on a case-by-case basis. Categorical assumptions about records cannot be reconciled with any of this court's decisions on the NPRA.
Is the
oh, sorry, go ahead.
No.
Well, the lower court did do the balancing test, and and decided that there were non-trivial privacy rights that were greater than the right, the personal interest of Ms. Bluth. So where did the court get it wrong? I mean, are we second guessing their analysis in terms of weighing, because they did do the balancing test?
I think the district court accepted their interpretation of Daunoret, that if there's an open criminal investigation, that necessarily the records have to be secret. The district court also entirely failed to consider redaction. And this court, in all of its cases about the CCSD test, has made clear what CCSD says. And I think this court needs not to adopt a bright line rule. This court needs to make clear to the government that it needs to follow the text of the NPRA and this court's case law. What CCSD and its progeny says is that privacy interests can support selective redactions. The district court relied in part on privacy, including this terrible officer's privacy, to withhold the entire file. Additionally, I think the problem with the contention, well, Sparks just got the case, there's no way anything in the file can be produced. The actual facts that we learned through the declaration and through Sparks' arguments in the district court show actually they could tell us more than not giving us the file. They could tell us more. They could give us the list of evidence. They could give us the dates on which that evidence was collected. They could tell us if the suspect was known, and I think he was. They could tell us where the evidence was collected from. An issue in this case isn't just about the criminal case. Reno, look at the timeline of the events. This happened, I think, in January of 2023, and Sparks didn't get referred the case from Reno until August of 2024. What happened here is that we know about two victims because Mr. Busby filed suit on behalf of two victims, and there's a federal prosecution that involves two victims. Sparks, however, has said there are numerous victims involved. They have said that in their pleadings. So to this day, there are members of the public that may not know that they were victims of this officer, that the government may have naked photos of them, that this may have occurred. The idea that total withholding of everything in this case was necessary because—
Are you advocating for public disclosure of those naked photos?
I am absolutely not, and neither was Ms. Bluth. No, and I think the arguments about, well, it's just too hard to balance the interests. I think that those sorts of arguments fail. Nobody's saying that the naked photos should be publicly disseminated.
So let me ask a more fundamental question, right? And I know you're in for amici and not one of the parties to this, but— So first, I think an easy question, do you understand to be the current status of the underlying criminal case?
I looked up the docket this morning. It is still ongoing. There is a protective order in that case, and there was a protective order in the civil suit too, so there is limited information. Okay. But I think the contention that just because there's a potential criminal case pending necessarily outweighs the interest in access means that if the legislature thought that, they would have said so, and they didn't.
Right.
NRS 179A.07100 don't say all these records are secret. They say which records of criminal history, which excludes investigatory records, and it relates to transactions between the government and suspects and subjects of criminal cases. It's very formalized, it's very limited, and it just says who the government may and must provide those records to. It specifically excludes investigatory information. The idea that just by listing a statute in the NPRA, game over, that can't fly. They're asking this court to essentially adopt the dissent from Daunoret and ignore the current text of the NPRA, even the prior text of the NPRA, and undo decades of careful and considered cases.
Okay, I have another question about procedural posture of this case, right? And you heard me ask these questions of your colleague on the other side, right? There is no cross appeal. The only appeal is by City of Sparks, who is only appealing because they were ordered to produce the narrow set of documents to Ms. Bluth. We don't have a cross appeal saying that the district court misweighed under the balancing test. So do we even get to that question?
Well, the district court can affirm the decision to disclose the records to Ms. Bluth on the alternative basis that urged by Ms. Bluth in the district court, and that is that there is no balancing test that supports disclosure here because they did not meet their evidentiary burden. The two-page declaration is far less of the showing than they made.
The problem with the court's order, right, the court says on multiple occasions that the confidentiality, the requests by the law enforcement agencies clearly outweighs the public's interest, but then turns around and says, but, I mean, you're a victim, so I'm going to disclose some records because that seems, you know, to be fair under the MPRA. I mean, Ms. Bluth is a member of the public like anybody else. He doesn't create a new balancing test for her. He just kind of says, because you're a victim, and that seems to be internally inconsistent.
Well, what this court should say is the court should have ordered that the records be produced subject to selective redactions of information that might clearly jeopardize an ongoing criminal investigation or jeopardize privacy.
So let me ask you about that, because and your opposition today referred that the court had sufficient information in its own mind to make a ruling without an in-camera review. To my understanding of the multiple page order, all the court did was say it has sufficient information to analyze the request. But there's nothing that explains that in any way as to what that was that would justify not doing any in-camera review of all these documents. So if we were to say the nature of the requester doesn't justify disclosure, would we be affirming the district court or remanding and saying this isn't sufficient, you have to do more?
I think that you could affirm the decision to disclose, albeit on other grounds, and you could remand for review of any selective redactions
Sparks proposes. We don't order the disclosure to the victim for other grounds. We just say that was improper. Would we be remanding and saying you need to review these records and then decide if any disclosure is appropriate?
This is my view. The government had their opportunity to meet their evidentiary burden. There has already been a great delay. The event happened in Ms. Bluth in 2023. We don't know how far back this officer's criminal misconduct and abuse of members of the public went. The Public Records Act provides for prompt access to public records, and there's multiple public interest reasons why access is appropriate besides the presumption in favor of access. One of those reasons is that by the time the public actually gets access, the newsworthiness and the ability to hold the government accountable might be over. And so it's my view, they didn't meet their evidentiary standard. There's a two-page conclusory declaration. What the district court really did was just say, we agree that if there's an open criminal investigation, that there's sufficient bases to overcome the presumption in favor of access. And I don't think that's good enough. I think they had their chance. I think this court's decisions and the text of the MPRA tell the government that it's got to come forward with not just hypothetical harms, but actual concrete information. And here the access not only is advanced my time is up, but the public cares about criminal cases, and access denied means no accountability for victims or the public. The amici and Ms. Bluth don't take an absolutist view. The balancing test, they've never established why it can't protect their interests.
Thank you.
The city agrees that the public cares about criminal cases, but that interest can be served when it's not undermining the investigation or people's constitutional rights. Again, this case is about timing with constitutional transparency. The city of Sparks takes issue with how many times the word secrecy was used in Ms. McCletchie's presentation in this case, because we are not obtaining government secrecy. This case file will be released when his conviction and his constitutional rights are no longer at issue. That is pending. He has since been indicted and that is pending. This case is about timing. Additionally, all of the arguments.
The case is currently pending in a court proceeding where there are rights of public access for that court proceeding. Why does everything have to be kept secret while there's an open court proceeding ongoing?
Well, it hasn't been ongoing, Judge, except for a jury trial in December. And at that time, I do agree that a lot of the Don Ray interests will be negated. But currently, today, he still has a right to a pure and untainted jury trial. And he has a right to due process. The Houston v. Maricopa County case held that the government violated a person's rights, privacy rights, and substantive due process rights by publicly acknowledging a potential criminal conduct before a conviction. Government transparency is not enough to subject someone to public punishment.
So it's not already in the public sphere that this Reno police officer has been is facing criminal charges for criminal conduct?
Yes, the indictment is in the public sphere, but the underlying facts are not. We do not want witnesses collaborating their testimony. We do not want witnesses disappearing in the worst case scenario.
Was there a prelim or a grand jury proceeding?
Grand jury.
So was the grand jury transcript publicly filed?
I do not know that, Your Honor. But again, this request came in September of 2024 before we even knew if there was going to be any co-conspirators.
So is this case moot?
No, it is not moot, Your Honor. It is not moot for several reasons, one of which is that we still have not given any records to date. Ms. Bluth's stated interest in her public records request was for civil litigation, which has since happened and concluded without these records. What we're here for today is about this particular case, and this record does not support any of these arguments. There's no secrecy here. We were actively investigating, and we were trying our best to find all the
evidence. The records that they requested still haven't been disclosed, correct?
Correct, because his constitutional rights are still at play. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. Well done today, folks. I appreciate the arguments and the briefing very much. The matter is going to stand submitted to the court, and the court will be in recess. Thank you.
All rise. Thank you.